And we are back with episode 675 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville. And yes, it's one of those years. Little bits and pieces of my childhood and even my mature interests just die off.
This is Gary from Jacksonville. And while I'd say some good things don't last forever, it appears that as if some bad ones are.
Ooh, oh, that's just wrong. That's wrong. You guys are just not starting this week off on a high note. Oh, man.
How can we? Well,
that's true. That's true. I know. You've got a whole bunch of stuff that you're just waiting to unleash upon the audience in just a few minutes. But hey, we are back for yet another week of the Critical Myth Show. And we're going to start off, as usual, with our news, go from there into episodic discussion, and then get into some open topics. But first, we start off the week with our usual general news disclaimer.
We will try to give you the news that we think you want to hear, even if it's stuff you don't want to hear. If you haven't heard it, you'll be spoiled, and you might even be angry.
That's right. You might be. I'm thinking perhaps you definitely will be. But we're going to start off with some news that fans of Xena may actually like. We'll see whether or not that's true or not. It would appear that when NBC brings back Xena, Warrior Princess, they're going to fully explore the Xena-Gabriel relationship. That's right. Back in the 90s, when Xena was on the first time, basically the entire run of the show was one big pile of barely restrained subtext between Xena and Gabriel. But they're just going to skip all of that this time around. And so they're going to, as... Javier Grillo Marshall. Oh, forget that. The guy from the 100. Come on, guys. Basically is saying that this is going to be a thoroughly modern update. Xena will be a very different show made for very different reasons, this guy named Javier said. There is no reason to bring back Xena if it is not there for the purpose of fully exploring a relationship that could only be shown subtextually in first-run syndication in the 1990s. It will also express my view of the world, which is only further informed by what is happening right now, and not too difficult to know what that is if you do some digging. Gee. Producer on the 100. I wonder
exactly. Yes. Or you could just watch the 100 for a preview. Yes.
Yes. Exactly. But you know, the one sad thing for Xena fans that may be really happy to hear this news is that it won't be Lucy Lawless and Renee O'Connor.
Yes.
Sorry, they're not coming back for their roles.
Yeah.
Isn't there enough slash fiction to just take care of like 10 seasons already for that?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure there's enough for perpetuity, for that matter.
Oh, pretty much. And I must say, I have really enjoyed some of the memes out there pointing out that, yes, all these male action stars who get to keep reprising their roles well into their 50s, 60s, etc., and just reminding us that, yes, Lucy Lawless and Renee O'Connor are still just in their 40s, and certainly as Lucy Lawless has just been demonstrating on Ash versus Evil Dead, perfectly capable of stepping into those roles again if they were given the chance, but oh well.
Yes, I would certainly say so. All right, well, we can go ahead then and move on to Friends over at CBS. Oh, did I say Friends?
Yeah,
I missed
you
bitter
did.
Enemies.
Yeah.
I did.
Frenemies, enemies, whatever. Yes, this was the week that we finally got the news that has been much anticipated or dreaded on this podcast. But Person of Interest does have a premiere date.
Hooray!
But also got the confirmation that yes, as we expected after all this dillying and dallying, that yes, this season 5 will be the last one. Certainly on CBS, and given how much they drag this out, probably for. Forever. But we do now know that it will be rolling out on Tuesday, May 3rd. It will be back in its Tuesday slot. However, following that, it will be aired every Monday and Tuesday in the succeeding weeks, which will lead up to a season finale / series finale, most likely, on Tuesday, June 21st. Certainly given the fact that most of the major cast and crew are already moving on to other projects. Jonathan Nolan, of course, with Westworld. Sarah Shahi is the new Nancy Drew, etc. It does appear that this final 13 episode run will in fact be the swan song, all I am happy about is the fact that they obviously knew this well in advance, Jonah Nolan and Greg Plagiman and the rest of that fabulous writing room is, you know, knew that it was coming. And from every indication they have given in the various social medias, this should be a quite spectacular final run to the show. So, you know, of course, I am very unhappy to see it end. But at the same time, very excited to see exactly what they have fashioned.
And I hate to say it, but other outlets have already said so. I didn't want to put it in the list necessarily because, you know, the pain. But it will, in fact, be a series finale.
Yeah.
Yeah. We all kind of know that that's where it's going. So, yes. That's...
Well, I mean, you know, not that it's necessarily good news, and I admit to not being a devotee of it as you two guys are, but at least they're giving them a chance to wrap things up and bring it to a strong ending, and some shows don't get that. So, you know, I'm not saying you should be overly grateful, but at least satisfied that they'll be able to, you know, tie things up or get things to a point where they're happy with.
Yeah, it's not so much that. I mean, it was the playing around with it and not giving it a definitive end. You know, a definitive decision earlier is what kind of got to me. I guess for me it was primarily in the hopes that Netflix in particular might pick it up. But the only way that could have happened is if they had said much earlier that this was it and given them a chance to start negotiating. Even though the shows like Longmire that get picked up that way are by far the exception rather than the rule. If this had all been known back in the fall, there was at least a possibility for that to happen. As it got strung out, it was just kind of basically making it a foregone conclusion that it's canceled and there is no chance of any sort of revival.
What's really interesting to me here is that for a while there, the show was not just a shoe-in for renewal for a couple years there, but was getting extra episodes and seemed to be the darling of CBS. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's unfortunate that the fall, so to speak, was so precipitous. But there we are.
Yeah.
Let's move over to Fox, just to really maybe twist the knife a little bit more.
Oh, yeah, I will. Yes, and this was sort of what I was alluding to in my opening lines.
Yeah, really?
You think?
You know, just when you want to say to yourself, life is fair, you hear things like this and realize that, no, it's actually cold and cruel and heartless. What we're talking about is the show Gotham has just been renewed for its third season. Ratings are rather lackluster, but I guess they're riding the superhero bandwagon and praying that ratings go up. So they get a full third season. Enjoy, everyone. We could always hope for things like maybe the villain Egghead will come and visit us.
No, that's impossible. Vincent Price has been long dead. Egghead can never return.
As I said, it's a sad day to announce that the season 3 has been renewed. And who knows what we'll see. Maybe they'll amp it up somehow. Maybe we'll see a Clark Kent. Maybe we'll get another real Joker coming down. We'll have to wait and see. Mm. But it has been renewed. And other than that, they really have not given us any information whatsoever. We're not, there's no announcements of returning cast. There's no announcements of dates when the season will start and episode counts or anything. It was a very sort of vague thing, just that it has been renewed. Although on the cusp of the Superman Batman movie coming out within the next week, or probably the week as you hear this, it's not surprising that they did announce this as when they did.
Yes.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah,
maybe they can turn Bruce Wayne around for you.
Yeah, and I'm really not sure where this leaves Fox's reputation as a network for genre and sci-fi stuff. It's like, okay, Gotham three seasons, Firefly, Space Above and Beyond, Almost Human, 1. You do the
really?
Math. This just doesn't make sense.
All right. Well, some things have come to pass as apparently have been foretold. Gary, this next piece is probably of no surprise to anyone.
Well, it's not that it's a surprise, but it's sort of a whiplash in some ways. The large-scale, ambitious drama of Kings and Prophets has been canceled by ABC after 2 episodes. In this age of having 1 to 2 season renewals after the first or second episode, the idea that they actually killed what was a rather high visibility, large scale project is a little shocking. Yet, nevertheless, they still have 8 episodes in the can, and they're not even going to bother to run through them. But you'll probably have to see them online if you are a devotee of this series, because they're not even going to burn through them on air. They're just gone. I'm a little surprised that it's quite that drastic.
I'm glad that you said that you're going to be forced to watch them if you're a devotee of the show, because for just a second there, I thought you were going to say that, Joe, no, we're just going to be forced to watch them, regardless of whether or not we want to. We're going to be forced to watch them online. Now, from what I heard, I mean, it sounded like the show was just a misfire right out of the gate, and certainly, you know, they gave it a little bit of a try here in midseason, but no, it just did not look like it was going to be anything that was going to make it past 1 or 2 weeks, and sure enough, that's exactly what happened. They got that far. So there we are. Let's see here. Moving over to cable, we have, oh, here's a renewal that I think a lot of people are going to be very, very happy about. Vikings will be coming back for a 5th season.
Yeah.
That's right. Now this is good. The network confirmed an order for Vikings season 5 for another 20 episodes. So a year ago, season 4 was picked up, then later extended to 20 episodes. So what that means is that after 3 seasons of 10 to 13 episodes, now they are, or rather 10 episodes, I believe it was, for those first 3 seasons. Now we're going to have, that's right, we go from 30 episodes the first 3 seasons to 40 episodes the next 2 seasons. So, yes, we're going to have a nice number of chapters in the long-standing tale of Ragnar Lothbrok. So let's hope that there's lots of Lagertha and so forth in all of this. Vikings is the number one telecast on Thursday nights on cable in all key demos.
Wow. Really? Wow.
Pulls in 4.2 million total viewers. That's right. So production will begin this summer. Lots and lots of Vikings. Floki is pleased. All right. Let's see here. Moving on from that kind of good news, Edmund, yes. I think you're pretty happy about this next one.
Yes, much better news over on AMC. Better Call Saul has been picked up for a 3rd season, so it's not quite the pickup after 2 episodes, but I think they're in episode 5, no real surprise to those of us who have been following and loving the show. But season 3 will have 10 episodes, and Bob Odenkirk, naturally, will still be the lead. And Vince Gilligan still running things, and it seems the AMC president was being rather eloquent in talking about watching Jimmy McGill's thoughtful, melodic, and morally flexible transformation into Saul Goodman is entertaining and delighting millions of fans, whether their starting point was Breaking Bad or not, which I would certainly echo. It's been quite a remarkable transformation, but for a series that some of us were wondering how could it actually live up to the stature of the predecessor. Better Call Saul has definitely become its own beast, and a very attractive beast at that.
Very good. Let's see here. Next, Gary, this is interesting news out of Spike TV.
It certainly is, and they're really putting a lot of, I'll call it, weight behind this series. The series we're talking about, of course, is the Red Mars TV adaptation of Kim Stanley Robinson's Mars trilogy. This has been a very well-received trilogy over the years, having been published massively and in 21 different languages and distributed across the world. On top of the news that's been previously announced that J. Michael Straczynski is going to both help write and showrun the series, they're bringing on Emmy-winning director Greg Yatanis, who's won an Emmy for House and as well as directed episodes of Damages, Heroes, Prison Break, and Alias, and he was also responsible for the 2003 sci-fi miniseries Children of Dune. This is being brought to us by the same production companies that recently handled WGN's Manhattan series, which we reviewed on the show, and Netflix Frank and Gracie series. this still full this the production company is Skydance Productions, that also does the a lot of J.J. Abrams productions, such as the Star Trek movie series and the last few Mission Impossible films. So they are starting to bring in what I would call reasonably talented heavier guns into this, and so I'm hoping we'll see something good come out of this. It definitely feels like they're making an effort.
Yeah, I would also mention Greg Gaetani's. I've been following on my Twitter feed for the Banshee show over on Cinemax, and he's been doing some incredible work over there. So I was extremely pleased to see this news get announced. I've been kind of hesitant about how committed Spike really is to these series that they keep announcing. We don't seem to get much hadn't been getting much news on, but certainly with the This press release, I am feeling more and more positive about what this series might be bringing us.
Hmm. That is true. I mean, they keep making these announcements. I wish that they would actually, you know, the announcement we want to hear, like a premiere day.
Yes. Or at least start filming.
Yeah, that too. Well, hey, if the renewal of Gotham didn't depress you before, Edmund.
We have also gotten confirmation that Shadowhunters will return for a second season. This, of course, with the series based on the Immortal Instruments books from Cassandra Clare. This is over on Freeform. Premiered in January, apparently gained a quick following with its built-in fan base. It will continue to follow Pretty Little Liars. Since certainly I have not been watching this show, that is about all I can tell you.
Yeah, over on our Facebook page, we have some commentary here from our friend Bronson, who basically panned this let me just find the exact quote that he gave, if I can. Come on, where is it? This is a bad time for me to not find the quote. There it is. His comment was, uh-oh, now who will appear in low-rent community theater productions?
Oh, dear.
Oh, Bronstom. It's not that bad, is it? Oh, well, maybe it is.
I guess it is.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, well, let's see here. We have news coming out of Cinemax. Robert Kirkman of Walking Dead fame has a new horror series coming out called Outcast. And ahead of the first season, the network has already decided to commit to a second season. That's right, the renewal announcement was made at South by Southwest, where it was also revealed that the series finally has a premiere date, the 3rd of June, 2016.
Wait, is it a renewal if it hasn't aired yet? Okay.
Is that just a renewal?
It's an extension, yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that is, but it can't be a renewal if it hasn't aired yet.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey. Anyway, Outcast is based on the comic book series of the same name by Kirkman and artist Paul Azaceta. Almost Famous star Patrick Fugit is headlining Outcast as Kyle Barnes, a man who has been afflicted by demonic possession for his entire life. In the present, Kyle is drawn into the mystery of Joshua Austin, an 8-year-old boy whose demonic possession is connected to Kyle's ordeal, and yet quite different. As Kyle searches for answers and for a way to free both himself and Joshua, he uncovers something that could literally change the fate of the world. The world. First season will run for 10 episodes, and presumably the second season will also be 10 episodes. So there you go. If you are a fan of Kirkman's work, you'll have two seasons at least coming your way on Cinemax soon. All right, and that means that we can move over to movie news. And, well, this is actually pretty good news for those who were bummed out when Paramount decided to drop The Little Prince literally a week before it was supposed to hit theaters. It was all ready to go, and then it was just yanked. So the Paramount had originally slated the movie to open in U.S. theaters as we record right now on the 18th of March, but then it quietly pulled it off of that date. It's now expected to be streaming on Netflix, who picked up the domestic rights to the film during this past few days. So now it should be on the streaming service later this year. The film, directed by Mark Osborne, premiered out of competition at the Cannes Film Festival last May, and has grossed $100 million internationally already, excluding the UK, Australia, Scandinavia, and Spain, where it was handled by various other distributors. It also was awarded Francis Cesar Award for Best Animated Film. So it combines 3D animation and stop motion and has a voice cast including Jeff Bridges, Rachel McAdams, Paul Rudd, among others. I can't pronounce.
Marion Cotillard, James Franco, and Benicio del Toro.
Brought to you by Edmund. Yes, so... so way to go, Netflix. I'm quite impressed at how quickly they snatched that one up.
Yeah. No. Well. This is what I mean. I've read some of the reviews about it from the places where they have been able to see it. And I'm very happy to see this finally getting distribution because this looks like a really wonderful adaptation of one of my favorite childhood books.
I wonder why they pulled it. It just seems odd given that it's been reasonably successful already internationally. So I wonder why they didn't think it'd play in Peoria.
It literally, they don't say anything at all about that in any of the articles. So it's really quite odd what happened with that. But hey, it's good on Netflix for picking it up. All right. And Gary.
Oh, yes.
For Spawn fans.
Oh, it certainly is. And this is, well, I mean, we've been hearing about a Spawn film for years now. And it looks like it actually is finally coming to pass. And I don't know if it's in spite of or because of the recent Deadpool success. I get a feeling that it's going to be a little bit more risque and curse-laden, I suppose. They've announced that it will be an R-rated Spawn movie. And creator Todd McFarlane is writing the script, and they have a good-sized script now, and they're working on editing and cutting it down to a shooting time limit of somewhere around 2 hours for a runtime. It isn't quite in production yet, but given that the script is almost in a finished position, it looks fairly forward that it's going to happen. It will be a live-action film, not animation, as some have suggested over the last few years as this has been talked about. So it's nice that they are keeping the original creator, Todd McFarlane, very involved in the scripting process. So fans of this character will probably feel that it's ringing much truer than it might be if it was passed over to someone else. This isn't the first Spawn movie, and it's not the first R-rated Spawn movie either, but perhaps with a new modern visual effects and things like that, it can bring a new twist to it, even though the original movie was really respectable in its own right. But we'll have to see where they take this one. They have not talked about plots or anything along those lines or actors at this point, so we'll have to wait and see for that. But obviously the script looks like it's has a thumbs up and is almost ready for production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not surprised that property is going to go for an R rating. It seems like a pretty natural fit. So there we are.
It's always been written that way.
Yeah, exactly. So now this is probably one of the more interesting movie news bits from the past week. I'm sorry that Bron Slum isn't here to once again tell us his pitch for the next Indiana Jones movie, because yes, apparently Harrison Ford and Steven Spielberg will be returning for Indiana Jones 5 in the summer of 2019. Yes, Indy is coming back. Disney just announced that it will be returning to one of its most famous franchises. Well, it was someone else's, but okay, their newly acquired famous franchises.
It's theirs now.
Yeah, yes. In 2019. Spielberg will direct, Ford will star, Frank Marshall and Kathleen Kennedy will produce. The official press release from Disney has no mention of George Lucas, thank goodness for small miracles, who sold Disney rights to the character in 2012 along with Star Wars. Yeah, so for the past several years, Spielberg and Ford have reiterated they wanted to come back to the series. There's also been talk about possible recasting. Whether or not this fifth film is going to set the table for that, no one knows, but the Indy of old will be back at least one more time. And there's a lot of people who are actually quite excited about this one. Over on our Facebook page for Critical Myth, our old friend Greg, who used to write some of our reviews, says it can't possibly be worse than the last one, can it? Indy 4 made the Star Wars prequels seem somewhat like competent films in comparison. There's really nowhere to go but up. To which point, Douglas M. said, Indy buys a cane, feeds the parakeet, and falls asleep watching the Weather Channel.
I was going to wonder if anybody suggested changing the whip for a cane, but hey, I'm less of a beat to it. Yeah.
I replied, still better than Crystal Skull, and Douglas M. agreed.
Yes.
Your thoughts on this, gentlemen? What do you think?
I think given everyone's horror at Han's fate in the latest Star Wars film, I think they'll be more than happy to see Harrison returning to the screen in such an iconic role.
Well, I think given the modular nature of Indiana Jones, it's not hard to plug in scenarios into the formula to make it work. So that I'm not concerned about. But even Harrison said that he can't do half the stuff that he used to do anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And so a lot of the physical action, I don't know if they're going to write him. I'm curious whether they're going to just write him out of it, bring in a new character that's going to sort of fulfill that action role for us, or they're going to make it even a slightly more cerebral film and break the mold. But I'd be hard pressed to do that. Disney likes to run formula. So I imagine we'll either have a stuntman who looks awfully a lot like Indy, or we'll have a sort of a younger substitute, much in the way LaBeouf was in Four.
Oh, wait, I have new news here that it's a little early, but I'll go ahead with it. Adam Driver is going to be playing Indy's
this isn't going to end well, is it?
No, that
I have a bad feeling about this.
wait a minute. That was off The Onion, wasn't it?
It had to be, right? Okay, all right. We're going to move on then to wait for it. That was awfully muted this time, much like our enthusiasm for some of the news this week.
Yes,
but it is casting news. And Edmund, why don't you get us started here with more news about Prison Break?
Yes, Prison Break is continuing to round up apparently all of the usual suspects. We now have news that original series stars Robert Knepper, Amory Nolasco, and Rockman Dunbar have also signed on to reprise their roles as T-Bag, Sucre, and C-Note, respectively. Joining, of course, Wentworth Miller and Dominic Purcell, returning as brothers Michael Schofield and Lincoln Burrows, and Sarah Wayne Callies as Dr. Sarah Tancredi. It does seem like they're getting pretty much all of the gang back together, and we will have to wait and see what this revival will bring and what strange explanations they're going to give us for papering over what's gone before.
Mm-hmm. I still feel like at some point Wentworth Miller is going to step out of a portal of some kind and chew the scenery talking about alternate universes.
Yes.
just guessing.
Maybe
anyway.
Maybe carrying a large gun type thing, yes.
Awfully warm here in prison, isn't it? Anyway, let's see here. Moving on to the next one, we have news about Starz in their American Gods adaptation. They have added Sucker Punch actress Emily Browning. She will be playing the role of Laura, who is the wife of the main character Shadow Moon. As most people know, the story of American Gods, spoilers for anyone who is not aware of what's going on with this story, but let's go ahead anyway.
Yes.
The drama follows an ex-convict named Shadow Moon, played by Ricky Whittle, who, upon early release from prison, is hired to be the bodyguard of a mysterious con man named Wednesday, played by Ian McShane. However, it's soon revealed that Wednesday is an incarnation of All-Father Odin. Gee, you couldn't figure that out by the name, right? Who's traveling America recruiting his fellow forgotten deities to wage an epic battle against the new American gods. According to The Hollywood Reporter, again, Browning will be playing Shadow's wife, Laura, who has been preparing for her husband's pending prison release. Little does she know that she will go on an unexpected journey that leads her to an epiphany about her relationship and affords her a second chance to get things right. Mm. Yes. I actually am really happy with this casting because I think Emily Browning is quite good.
Yes, so she is. Yeah, no, this is looking better and better the closer it gets.
Mm-hmm. All right, and speaking of Han Solo a little bit a while ago, there is some speculation regarding the casting of the young Han Solo in the quote-unquote anthology film. At least that's what they used to be calling it. Disney and Lucasfilm have apparently whittled the list of actors who could star in the Han Solo origin movie down from every young man in Hollywood to just three potentials: Taron Egerton, Jack Rayner, and Alden Ehrenreich. Something like that. It's German, I suppose. According to a report from The Hollywood Reporter, Disney is now in the final stages of casting a man to fill the Corellian trousers of Han Solo following a round of screen testing in London. So the above trio was apparently cut from a list of 10, but that's not all. Apparently, there are possibly two other names under consideration, Blake Jenner from Glee and Jack O'Connell from Unbroken. It's probably not too surprising that we're hearing about a final list of potentials here because, well, there's been rumors that young Han or some age Han might make a cameo appearance in Rogue One later this year. But if they're still casting, it means that maybe that's not going to be the case. but maybe they're getting ready for some potential reshoots. Who knows? Whatever the case may be, they need to start production very soon if they're going to have this movie out when they expect to. So there we are. Let's see. Next on the list is some casting news for a certain Justice League movie. Gary.
Yes, they've announced yet another character to round out some of the Justice League movie. The character isn't one of the main characters, but might be memorable to comic book fans. The character we're talking about is Aquaman's wife, Queen Mera, and she's going to be played by the actress Amber Heard. It's been hinted at for a while, and if you look at some of the teasers they've had for the Justice League, they have had pictures of Mira's costume, or at least the character, in the background on some of the boards that they've been scanning through as you have the previews. So it has been confirmed that she will be there. She's going to be playing along with Jason Momoa's Aquaman character, and we'll have to see what role they play. I'm told that Atlantis is supposed to be rather significant in the movie. In the movie plot, so it's not surprising that they do want to bring in another Atlantean character, and she's definitely a good one to bring in. I suppose tight green scales never hurts a movie.
I suppose not. Certainly, that role has, or that character has been prominent in recent years, so it makes sense to bring her in. So there we are with that particular bit of news. So we can now, well, unfortunately, move over into the Immortium section. So, yes, we're going to go ahead and start with news from, well, this is certainly someone who is a luminary here, Ken Adam, who was the production designer whose work on dozens of famous films included the fantasy sets that established the look of the James Bond films, The Car and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and Stanley Kubrick's Doctor Strangelove. The sinister war room beneath the Pentagon was the work of Mr. Adam, and he passed this about a week ago in London at the age of 95. So his death was announced by the James Bond Twitter account run by MGM Studios and Eon Productions. Back in the day, Mr. Adam was hired by producer Albert Broccoli, known as Cubby, to design the sets for the first Bond film Dr. No back in 1962. With a budget equivalent to about $300,000 today, Mr. Adam delivered the title character's sleek futuristic headquarters, his extravagant living room with wall-size aquarium, and his creepy grotto-like laboratory. And the combination of futurism and fantasy became a trademark of the Bond franchise, and so Dr. No started a new approach, Mr. Adam told The Guardian back in 2002. I think they realized the design, exotic locations, plus the tongue-in-cheek element were really successful, and so it became more and more that way. So really, he became kind of the guru for these extravagant sets that were used in many of the early Bond films. And then he went on to just many collaborations with Stanley Kubrick and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to jump in here and say that, I mean, he of course is best known for all the work on Bond, but the fact that he went from Bond to also working on the Michael Caine, Harry Palmer films, The Ypres File and Funeral in Berlin, which were at the time kind of seen as the sort of anti-Bond, where Caine was sort of this working class schlub who happened to still get the better of all of these spy opponents, and the fact that his second collaboration with Kubrick was on Barry Lyndon, where it was absolutely sort of the complete opposite from Bond and Dr. Strangelove of working on trying to recreate Kubrick was basically trying to recreate the look of all these old classic paintings, and Ken Adam came in and just did that absolutely brilliantly. His work just really spanned this whole gamut from historical realism out to futurism and fantastic. And it was just a true master of the craft, and the epitome of cinematic production design.
So certainly a long and storied career, and 95 is a pretty good run, to say the least.
Absolutely, yes.
All right. And Edmund, I believe that you're the perfect one to take the next one.
Yeah. Well, a few years ago, we did lose Gerry Anderson, the creator of Super Marionation and the Thunderbirds and Captain Scarlet and, of course, UFO, most beloved by me. But his wife, Sylvia, did survive him. But we just got word this week that she has died after a short illness. You know, was always a close collaborator with Gerry on all of these projects. But perhaps in terms of her public persona, most famous as actually providing the voice of Lady Penelope in the Thunderbird series, also very prominent in working on the production designs and especially the costume designs and fashions on UFO in particular. She did feel, as it turned out, unfortunately mistakenly, that in the year 1980 and beyond, that wigs would be prominent on both men and women, which resulted in the purple wigs on Moonbase, and of course the wig that appeared on Commander Straker. Although behind the scenes, it does appear that that may have been more due to the fact that Ed Bishop really hated having his real hair bleached to that striking blonde, and the wig was really just much easier to deal with. But certainly all of Century 21 Productions, you know, was a labor of love between Gerry and Sylvia, and it is just very sad news to see that now both of them have passed on.
Mm. Yes, indeed. I mean, I can't say that I was the biggest fan of Thunderbirds, but certainly I saw quite a lot of it when I was younger, and a lot of the Gerry Anderson productions, so this is an unfortunate loss, yet another one, to say the least.
Yes.
Gary, we have one more.
Yeah, we do. We have this year just keeps on giving. And,
I don't think that's the way to put it.
Well, I want to say this in a certain respect. While, you know, we are losing, a great number of actors and directors and other creative people that have influenced both us and many others. At the same point, it is nice that some of these people haven't been talked about and haven't been remembered in some time. And it is nice that as their names are brought up, it's brought up with affection, respect, and awe. So as these names, unfortunately, seem to hitting us this year, we realize what we gained from these people as well. So I'd like to, you know, sort of keep that in mind, that, you know, as we talk about this stuff, and it is always with respect and appreciation of their works. The person that I have to mention is Emmy award-winning actor Larry Drake. You probably most know him from playing Benny on L.A. Law, but he has had several other roles in different genres, everything from horror to an episode of Firefly to several other roles. And he passed on at the rather young age nowadays of 66. And he was, you know, known as a very nice man, and he was involved in several environmental causes as he as his career had rolled down from acting. And as I said, you don't get people who of that talent skill that come around as often anymore. I don't know about you, but when I first watched L.A. Law, I had pretty much assumed that he was I don't know what the politically correct word is, intellectually challenged actor, but it turned out that he was not, and he was someone just playing a role, and he did it exceptionally well.
Hmm. Yeah, I would say so. Edmund, anything to add to that? I think you covered most of the roles that I know him from.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually had the same reaction in terms of the L.A. Law role, the phrase is popping into my head, which doesn't seem appropriate, but was sort of pleasantly surprised to discover that that this was a case of just an actor just absolutely nailing the portrayal, doing lots of work to support the rights and the cause of people with disabilities. I got to mention, this is something where I was sort of aware of him doing it, but only came up upon the films later, but that Darkman series he did with Sam Raimi is actually a lot of fun. I mean, it's you know, it's one of those sort of one of those movies that's just it's, you know, yes, it's a little cheesy, it's a little over the top, but but it's got that Sam Raimi touch of being over the top in just the right ways, and he was a wonderful protagonist in those films as well.
Well, I for one would like to say 2016, if you could maybe stop with this mass killing, that would be nice. Honestly, at this point, we're really tired of having so many names in the In Memoriam section. It was supposed to be the occasional section, not a weekly constant. Just saying. Grim Reaper, stop with the overtime. All right. We are actually therefore done with the news for this week, unless there's anything else that you guys have on your list that you are aware of. And I'm not aware of anything, so...
No.
Okay, well, then we are going to go ahead and wrap this one up. Next time, we are going to get deep into episodic discussions. So, until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.